you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and anything else we feel like. We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra with Which Way to Radioland. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Talking Metal Podcast. Hey Emily, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. We have you on the show today, and it's been far too long. We've been missing you, so thanks for joining us again. And who are you going to interview for us today?
Jason Beeler of Saigon Kick.
Very cool.
I've been wanting to have him on for so long. He's such a good guy. Really enjoy him on social media and stuff, and I finally got to check out his solo show in New York City last week.
Now, there's already a live record out of that show.
Yes.
Was a quick turnaround.
He said that he was recording it, but I wasn't sure if he was serious or not. So I guess he was.
Wow. Okay. So I know. I'm on his emailing list now because there is a cool thing he does on his site. You can get some music for free on his site.
Yeah.
He offers like a, I guess it's like a compilation EP because it appears that all the different tracks are from different releases. But if you go to the site and poke around a little bit, you'll find the
the free EP that you can download. I highly recommend doing that. Yeah, some really great tunes.
Yeah, he's very active. I mean, he's constantly putting out new music, and all of it is very, you know, diverse, you know, and I enjoy all of it. I was just listening to some of it tonight.
Cool. And speaking of diverse, I have to get in one final plug here for Heavy Montreal, the great festival. We are on our way up there. I'm going up a day early for the 77 Montreal Festival, which is more punk and hardcore bands. So I'm looking forward to that. And then Emily will join me on this Saturday, this coming Saturday, just days away at Heavy Montreal.
Wow.
And what a diverse lineup. I went through on the other day, and I literally listened to every band. The bands that, I mean, obviously I know what Manson and Zombie and Trivium and all those bands, but bands I didn't know, I went through the lineup and listened to everyone. And there's some really great bands appearing this year. I really cannot wait.
Who was that DJ you were playing tonight? I was dancing for like
yeah,
half an hour.
That guy is, I don't know how you pronounce it, but I'm like terrible with names. Emily's good. See the Perturbator?
Perturbator.
Yeah.
And I actually, one of the guys at the Jason Bieler show told me that he loved them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a guy wearing he had a sword t-shirt on, and he was hanging out with the dude from St. Vitus that
right.
I did a cover show with him.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And yeah, just so many great bands. Power Trip, I'm excited to see. Havoc. We're going to be doing an interview with Havoc, which is a thrash band, great band. Can't wait for you guys to hear them. Warbringer, Blind Witness, The Agonist, Marilyn Manson, Under Oath. I think we're going to hook up with Under Oath for an interview. Witchcraft, The Black Dahlia Murder. We're going to have them. They're going to hopefully swing by, it sounds like, for an interview. And I am so excited to see Gojira, because I've never seen Gojira.
Me neither.
And they are just fantastic. And let's get into a little Gojira right now on Talking Metal. This is Silvera.
Stand up on your feet and rise. With every fall, you get the pain. You learn the lesson.
Silvera, I believe that's how you pronounce it, by Gojira, who we will be seeing July 29th at Heavy Montreal, one of the headliners, and it's going to be great. What a great event. I cannot wait to get up there. Niall, Demon Hunter, Glory Hammer. Have you heard of this band, Glory Hammer?
No.
They like wear costumes. They come on stage.
I like costumes.
And they almost sound...
They wear makeup?
No, like outfits, like theatrical.
Nice.
And very like, I don't know what... They call it like heroic metal or something. It's very like you gotta hear these guys.
I'm down.
Glory Hammer, of course, the classic heavy metal band from the 80s is still out there rocking. Helix, they will be playing.
Can't wait.
Heavy Montreal and the Metal Queen.
So looking forward to it.
Lee Aaron and Alstorm, pirate metal from have played them on.
Not
the
to be confused with Hailstorm.
Yeah.
Hailstorm.
Yeah. Alstorm. Well, I think it's Alstorm. Like Al.
Ale. Yeah, like Al. Beer.
Yeah. Like, yeah, Al. All right. And on that note, let's get into Emily's interview with Jason Bieler. What should we play going into the interview, Emily? Maybe a little Saigon Kick?
Yeah, let's do some Saigon Kick. Let's put on Hostile Youth. For those of you who, I mean, I encourage everyone to go back and listen to their entire catalog, but, you know, especially this album is just fantastic.
Cool. And they're a band that I didn't really know a heck of a lot about, except the one kind of hit, Love Is On The Way, right?
That, yes. Yeah.
And I didn't love that song. You know, so
how could you? That is the best power ballad there is. Someone sent out like a tweet and was like, "What's your favorite power ballad?" That's what I responded.
Right. Yeah, maybe it's just I'm not a big power ballad guy.
Yeah,
but this
that's
song,
not your thing.
"Hostile Youth," is just great. I really love it. And
yeah, you
through
gotta go
you,
back and revisit.
Yeah, I have been. I've
for
been
sure.
through you. I've been yeah. going back and revisiting what a great catalog and diverse catalog Saigon Kick have, and. A band that the critics really dug. I mean,
always.
Two people I respect, Eddie Trunk and, of course, Martin Popoff, right. that second record, The Lizard, they love that. They love that
Eddie
record.
Was at that this show that I was at that they played like a year and a half ago at Webster
right.
Hall. And I just stood at the back, you know, the little soundboard in the back and just like hung out with him. That's like one of his favorite bands.
Yeah. Yeah. And Eddie usually doesn't show up at a show
unless he's getting paid. He wasn't there
yeah,
doing anything.
He was just
there
as a fan.
As a fan.
And you know who else? We saw him also just at a fan at the UFO Saxon show.
Yes, we did.
Not doing any
yes,
announcing and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah,
there are a couple bands that he is very, very loyal to. And yeah, Saigon Kick is one of them for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And Martin Popoff, who has written so many great books and is now working with Sam Dunn on the Banger TV stuff and has been a guest on this podcast many, many times. I have read his volumes of reviews, the Collector's Guide to Heavy Metal albums, and rarely does he give out a 10.
He doesn't.
You know, 10 is the rating, yeah. 10 out of 10, obviously. He gives out a lot of zeros, you know. Lee Aaron, who we mentioned earlier, who I love personally.
Okay, name
Aaron
an album from the
zeros.
90s. Let's look it up right now. Let's do this. Let's do this live on the show. So,
from
like, a metal album from the 90s.
Emily has Martin Popoff's book. It's volume 2, The Collector's
right
Guide
now.
To Heavy Metal, the 90s.
I've got Merciful Fate.
How about?
I've got Metal Church, Meshuggah. What do you want to hear?
How about,
Metallica?
How about Dirt? Alice in Chains.
Alice in Chains, Dirt. Okay. All right.
An album that I would give 10 out of 10 to. And again, there's very few 10 out of 10s.
Does he have that in here? Hold on.
Oh, he's got to.
Alice in Chains, Dirt. He gave a 10.
Yeah.
That's another
10. Which is rare. Okay.
That is very rare.
How about, let's see. I'm trying to think of something that came out. How about.
Amen. Remember? Amen.
Yeah. Amen, KCKS.
7.
Yeah, which I love those records. Yeah.
I'm going through the A's right now. Anthrax, what album did they put out? Anvil.
Sound of White Noise?
Wait.
What does that have?
Return of the Killer A's. He gave a six.
Yeah. What about The Sound of White Noise by Anthrax?
Sound of White Noise, he gave a 10. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one, too.
Yeah.
Hey, we're making it sound like he gives 10s
no,
out
he
a
doesn't.
Lot.
No, he doesn't. We're picking
barely,
out good albums.
He barely
Let's
ever
pick out
does.
Some mediocre albums from the 90s. Let's do this. Arch Enemy Stigmata, he gave actually a 9.
Right.
I'm going through the A's right now. Think of some other ones from... I wish we had like a live line right now where we could get the fans to call in and say, look at this one. Cannibal Corpse, I've got. What do you want to hear?
How about David Lee Roth, A Little Ain't Enough? Did he do that? That was, because to me, that was kind of a weird record. I liked certain things about it and didn't like other things about it.
All right. It's a long review, and he gave it a 7.
Okay.
That's David Lee Roth, A Little Ain't Enough.
He gave it a 7. Becker. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Becker was on that.
Yeah. So what did he give Saigon Kick, The Lizard?
A 10.
A 10.
We just talked about that.
So do you want to read a little bit of his review of Saigon Kick?
Yeah, I won't. It's a pretty lengthy review, but... part that caught me was, it says, place Saigon Kick between Warrior Soul and Enough's Enough,
right.
Both bands that we love,
yeah.
But place them higher, as the persona of the band just seems to shift like a mirage, making for a top flight cerebral experience that headbangs at the same time. Cosmic, slack, and cutting edge all in one. Saigon Kick gets me every time. And the fact that he says cosmic, slack, and cutting edge all in one. Jason and I kind of covered this in the interview, because the fact that they're so diverse.
Right.
And at that time period, you kind of had to fit into a category, you know? And
right.
We're not as accepting as we are today of more diverse albums and, you know, people that don't necessarily fit into a box.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like it was wrong time, wrong place for Saigon Kick in some ways.
Cool. Well, I tell you what, let's get into the song we just mentioned, which is Hostile Youth by Saigon Kick. And that will be followed by Emily Striegel's interview with Jason Bieler.
Play.
Talking Metal listeners, this is Emily Striegel coming at you today, and I've got on the phone with me from Saigon Kick, Jason Beeler. How you doing, Jason?
I couldn't be any better. Thanks for asking. How about yourself?
Awesome. I had so much fun seeing your acoustic show in New York City this past weekend. That was a really good time. Thanks for coming out and playing for us.
Oh, please. Thank you for coming out and hanging out for a couple of hours to hear me go through some audio nonsense.
That was fun. And, you know, like, there were no casual fans in the audience. I'm one of those people that likes to sit back and kind of watch the reactions of audience members. And I can tell you that a large percentage of that audience knew every word to every song you were singing, which was really cool.
Which is even a higher percentage than me, which is pretty impressive.
They did. I think they knew the words even better than you may have. I don't know.
Which is often the case, which is why I appreciate them so much.
Yeah, they definitely were an enthusiastic group. And you did a mix of Saigon Kick songs, and you also did a lot of your solo stuff and some covers. Oh my God, you did a Jellyfish cover. So if you heard someone singing obnoxiously loud, that was me on that one.
Please, I love that band, so it's always fun to at least take a crack at a Jellyfish song.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. So how often you've been doing a number of these acoustic shows? I know I missed your show. You were in NYC late last year, and I know you were up in Boston, and you've done some shows in Florida. So is this kind of a newer thing for you, or have you been doing this for a while?
Over the last year, I decided to just kind of, you know, just as a, you know, personal challenge to like strip all the music down just to an acoustic guitar and see which songs actually have legs and can be worked that way. It's always been like a, you know, that's always a kind of a true test of a song, is like it should work in multiple kind of ways. And so I thought it'd be fun to try to do that and just go out and do these songs. And so I've gone to LA, Chicago, New York, Boston, Atlanta, some dates in Florida, and just kind of been doing it. You know, it's just been so much fun. Like you saw, like the people that come out are super, super. It's really, I know everybody always says that, it's like a kind of silly thing to say, but it's really more like a giant family event than it is a show.
It truly is.
everyone just gets together and talks, has some cocktails, and you know, it's been so much fun, selfishly so much fun that I've never had more fun ever doing anything ever.
That's so awesome to hear. I mean, it was such a good vibe in the room. Everyone was, you know, just like you said, like hanging out, and we could all, it did feel like a family. It felt like you could walk up to anyone in that room and start a conversation. And part of that is your energy. You have a really good energy. You have, you know, you're really, really funny. I'm sure people have told you that before, but like your in-between song banter is almost as entertaining as the songs.
Well, I think of this as a poor man's way to get into stand-up comedy.
So totally.
I'm just too chicken to leave the guitar at home just yet, so I use that in case everything – if the jokes start failing, I can play a few more songs, and if I get in a role, I can just not play any songs. Ultimately, that'd be my goal, and I think everybody's goal is if I just stop playing music entirely and go for a stand-up tour.
No, I seriously think you could, and I've had a fun time getting to know you a bit, just observing you on social media, and you're one of those people – who managed to tackle serious, sometimes upsetting current events to me, and you know, with just the right amount of, you know, sarcasm and wit and silliness. So I appreciate anyone who can make me laugh nowadays. So if you're not following Jason on Twitter and on Instagram, you should be doing that.
Yes, I am like the Kardashian of 90s rock to me, that's the beauty of social media, is that there's people like you who clearly get it and understand the tone, and that's always fun, obviously, but the people who don't get it, I enjoy more.
God. I know. Oh my God.
And I know that's a sickness, and I should probably go see somebody about that, but like, you know, even just the anything I say, like when people just, they don't realize, like, I think in social media, like anything you say is taken verbatim, which explains
it
a lot about
is.
Our country.
I know.
It's funny. Like, no matter what I say, it's like there's a group of people who, like, there's Beeler being a jackass again. And then there's a group of people who are like, you know, I literally posted, I posted it, but a friend of mine made a picture of me as a George Costanza from the Art of Seduction pose, like, where he's like in boxer shorts.
I saw that.
It's like my head, like, on his body. Done fairly well, I will admit. But I mean, I literally got people calling me, like, messaging me saying, you know, it's so good that a man of your size cannot be body shamed,
and
that you would pose, you know, like without your clothes on like that. And it's just like, wow, it's like you really can say and do anything online, and people just, yeah, that's it. That's the truth.
Oh my gosh, it is. It's like, I saw a meme recently that said, I wish sarcasm could be a font. You know, like, let's get so people know that we're being sarcastic. Like, can we have a sarcasm font, you know, that we use so people know when we're being utterly, totally sarcastic? But
yeah, I mean, it's really a strange time. But that's kind of the fun of, I think, the whole Saigon Kick thing and the solo stuff. And, you know, whilst not exactly Dave Matthews or Foo Fighters esque in national scope or impact, I got to tell you, pound for pound, I have a really funny group of people and people that generally get it. And, you know, I wouldn't trade that for anything, because it's just funny to watch, you know, the interactions, and then people get into their own little arguments about stuff. And it's just, you know, the more sarcastic, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, my gosh. I would be in a loony bin if it weren't for people like you and some sarcastic personalities out there. And, you know, even in your solo stuff, I noticed the same kind of personality shining through a bit, because I bought your you're very prolific, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. But Keep Calm and Carry On, it's a really good tune. I don't know exactly when you wrote it, and we'll talk about it in a bit. But, you know, it's got this happy kind of pop rock vibe. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, he's singing about the effing apocalypse here, I think. Like, what? So again,
that's been my favorite thing to do. I mean, just, you know, I find, like, you know, as I get older, I think I'm 26 now. So let me see. That would be, no, I'm just kidding. But as you get older, I think, you know, there's an inherent silliness to raw aggression. To me, that doesn't mean you can't be making Meshuggah Metal and be an 80-year-old person and having a blast. Just, I find personally writing mindless, aggressive, aggro, bro rock to not be really as in mentally engaging. So what I really find interesting and as a challenge is to write really syrupy melodic things that are all lyrically horrifyingly way darker than normal metal.
Totally.
Because again, because of our culture, so many people just miss it. Like, you could literally be talking about amputations and deadly infections. And if you wrap it in a syrupy melody, I mean, a vast quantity of people just, you know, oh, that's a nice little tune. And then people who are fans a little bit more will dig in and go, oh, my God, that's horrifyingly terrible. Why would you say something like that? So that's really, like, what I enjoy as a writer, is just to kind of, like, you know, more of that. I think it's just too easy to be, kill the world.
Right.
And it's just, it's so overt and over the top that,
yeah. And there's a place for that too. There's a place for that too. But we definitely need the Jason Buehlers out there for sure.
So I love it. I love heavy music. And I just, for me personally as a writer, I just feel like, you know, it just wouldn't be as authentic if it wasn't as twisted for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. It fits you. So you're giving away a 6-song EP on your website? Did I see that? JasonBuehler.com? Or is that?
Yeah, I mean, I put together a little group of songs that people can grab off the website to kind of get a taste of some of the stuff that I'm doing. I mean, but yes, I am.
And they can, the best place to get your stuff is at Bandcamp. I mean, where's the best place where we can support your solo career?
Yeah, jasonbuehler.camp.com is where I wound up doing all this stuff. I have a label with you know, international distribution and all that kind of stuff. When this whole thing started, I wanted nothing to do with anybody, and I don't mean that in a bitter, I hate the industry sense. It's just I really wanted to just write music for myself the way I wanted to. I didn't want to sit down at a meeting with radio guys or marketing people and then talk about trajectories and see PowerPoint presentations. My whole goal with this was to get back to writing. So I wanted to kind of improv write, meaning that I would write a song from scratch, and within 24 to 48 hours, I'd mix it, finish it, master it, and put it out for people to have. That just the whole sense. And really, the kind of point was I just wanted to keep sharpening as a writer, and I didn't want to spend 7 months crafting an Adele-sized mega pop tune and getting like snare reverbs and all that stuff, right? And just get lost in that. I just wanted to keep writing and keep writing.
Yeah.
And so the Bandcamp format was really kind of you know, the perfect place. Again, not really with any business aspirations about it. Just like I was like, I don't want to have to, you know, pitch to iTunes and, you know, format things. And eventually some of the stuff did get onto iTunes and Spotify and all that. But it was really just about writing. And strangely enough, the second I stopped trying to do anything, it's taken on a life of its own, which is awesome and unexpected and brilliant.
That's really, really cool. I mean, the industry's changed so much. One of the stories you were telling at the acoustic show on Friday was like you're sitting like in Sweden, you know, recording the third record with Saigon Kick, and they're sending you like $300,000. Like, can you imagine? Like, that's another era entirely, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, and we felt like we were low man on the totem. We didn't have a real budget, you know, like some of the big, you know. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, even when we started our label, which would have been around 2000 or so, you know, as an indie, we were making records for 100, 125. 75,000, you know, I mean, those were just the budgets. I mean, you know, I know bands of that time period that are, you know, making records for, you know, $5,000 and $10,000 now.
Absolutely.
It's just changed. But I think it's a good thing. You know, it's culled the herd is what I like to say. Like, you know, it got rid of your, I want to go to Hot Topic and be a rock star guy. And I think what you're seeing is more people who love creating art and music for the sake of making music. And, not that look, anybody should be able to do whatever they want to do. So I'm not an elitist of like only the greats make music, but it's just, I find people that are touring now in general and people that are creating music are doing it for a lot more of a pure reason than maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
100%. I had the same conversation with Dave Windorf of Monster Magnet, and he was just like, you know, they've weeded out the people that are doing this for the wrong reason. But you know, the thing that makes me sad and upset, and I have extended conversations with people, is like, how do we make it lucrative again for musicians? Because, you know, I always love getting people's thoughts on this, because in the era of streaming and in the era of people who don't even know about things like Bandcamp, and
right,
because honestly, there are people, I mean, I support artists on Bandcamp, but a lot of people don't even know what it is or how to access it because they've got these streaming services at their fingertips. So what's the solution in your mind?
I mean, I'm really fortunate in the sense that my career started in a time where, you know, millions of dollars were being spent to kind of market bands and stuff like that. So, I mean, for me to say I'm facing the exact same struggle as a brand new artist is probably not true. But at the same point, it's amazing to me, you know, it's like the work you have to do to make people aware, there's just so much noise, whether it be your gig or, you know, your music or whatever you're doing. It's just, you know, it just comes down to old school hustling. I mean, you know, you got to be out there pounding away and doing that. But there's a ton of money to be made if you know, I mean, people support you. And even with this, it's like in many ways, it's been like starting all over again. Doing these acoustic shows, but it's been great because I went to Tampa the first time and did really well, but wasn't sold out. Then I went back like, you know, 8 months later, and now the gigs are sold out and they're selling out in advance and people are growing and, you know, and getting into the kind of whole vibe of it and having a good night. And, you know, I think it's just about being, you know, one, you have to do something that people want to come out and see. And so, you know, I mean, I always said that to bands, even back in the day, it's like, if no one's coming to your shows and you've done multiple shows, then there's something wrong with your show. If no one's buying your music, you know, maybe it's just really good, but people don't buy just good stuff. You know, totally. People in this day and age are gonna wait and buy the stuff they find really, really, really compelling. And I don't know. I mean, I think you just got to be a little bit smarter. I mean, you got to reduce your crew. You got to reduce all the stupid stuff that you know. I don't need a cheese boy on tour, and I don't need maybe you know a hairstylist, and I don't need to be, you know. So you kind of do things, you know. You know, and build it up, you know, brick by brick, the old-fashioned way. And then, you know, what starts as, you know, 70 people or 100 people hopefully becomes 150 and 200. And those people keep spreading the word. And, you know, and hopefully the music starts to – I mean, like, I've been doing this Bandcamp thing for 2 years. And I'm telling you, like, every day there's new emails or new messages. Like, I had no idea you were, you know, doing anything. And yet you think you're on Facebook or you think you're on Twitter, yeah. And you're – speaking to the world, and you're just not. You're speaking to such a small fragment. So it's unfortunately, it's the old. It's the same as it's ever been. It's time and effort. You know.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
No shortcuts.
Yeah, but I know that you can't. You probably can't get rid of your hairstylist because you've got that really good man bun going, and you certainly have someone helping you with that, right?
Now, far be it from me to correct you, but I've gotten into, including with my family, because the man bun in and of itself would bring shame upon my children, and I can't do that. This is more of a top knot or some kind of
sprout. It is a top knot. Kind of,
it's not bunned. I refuse to accept the physics of the bun. The bun would be a rolled over kind of singed bun, and this is more just a sprout.
I had to buy one of your t-shirts because your logo, who drew that for you? That like mohawk thing with the skull? That's an amazing, amazing logo.
Oh, thank you. This kid, Robert Merrick, out of Orlando, just been a genius. He's also the one who's done the vast majority of like the silly Photoshops of me. He single-handedly branded me back into relevance.
Seriously. It's a really, really good one. Hold on to that one.
Awesome.
So I got to see you kill it with Saigon Kick at Webster Hall about a year and a half ago. I was trying to remember. Like, time is flying by. I have no clue. And you did a smattering of shows around then. I know at that show, Eddie Trunk was there. I know Eddie's a big fan and always been a big support. And he wants you to play Come Take Me Now at his funeral.
Yes. That is, as silly as that story is, that's a true story.
I know. It's a good story. And I think your response was something along the lines of, oh, cool, man. I can't wait. Or something.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be awesome.
But anyway, that was a great show. So what's the status? I've heard rumors that there might be a new release at some point. Are you guys planning on doing any more dates? What's up with Saigon Kick?
I am as perplexed and quizzical over the Saigon Kick plans as anybody. We all get along, which is a massive victory from the past, where I think the only intent was to put an axe in each other's head. So that's a massive social victory.
Yes.
But I don't think there's any everybody's doing their own thing and kind of working at their own pace. And, you know, I don't think anybody wants to do – I know specifically speaking for me, you know, I don't want to do any convincing or talking into. If the right gig, you know, gets – in the wind, and we want to do that, I mean, we'll do that. There's no yes or no. There's no broken up. There's no active plan to move forward. I think it's just kind of this nebulous floating circus.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, I could see you. I've been at so many festivals where I'm like, oh, I just wish we could squeeze Saigon Kick in right here. You know, like I go to a lot of festivals. So that's kind of a dream of mine someday. Maybe that'll happen at some point. We'll see.
Well, may I suggest you dream bigger?
Dream bigger.
Okay. I want to see you really seize life. If one of your dreams is seeing Saigon Kick on a festival, I really want to encourage you.
I have a lot of dreams, Jason. A lot of dreams.
Okay.
So,
fair enough.
A journalist, Martin Popoff, he's a critic. He's been on Talking Metal many times. He called Saigon Kick's second album, The Lizard, a perfect album. I don't know if you know this, but he gave you guys a 10 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if you... Do you know Martin Popoff? He's Canadian.
I do. Yep.
Yeah, he...
I don't know him. We know each other, I should say. Like, in social media sense, where everyone knows everybody, I know him.
I'll send it to you.
We haven't hung out.
I'll send you the little snippet. I don't know what book I saw it in, but he said The Lizard was a perfect album. So, any memories you can share of that? Is that Atlantic Story with Jagger from that time period?
That was actually the period right, but that was the first record time period.
Do you want to tell our listeners that one? This is a classic.
I think I need to save that for live. It's just so offensively horrible. I would hate to not.
Come to the live show if you want to hear his Mick Jagger story, everyone.
It's
worth the admitted ticket price alone.
I think so. But I mean that's awesome to hear. I mean, the cool thing about this whole Saigon Kick thing is, you know, the band always made kind of diverse records, and as of late it's been really great to hear, you know, from people, like all of a sudden, like whether it's Chris Cale from Five Finger Death Punch or Corey Taylor or Devin Townsend, go like, oh man, you know, I got it, I understood what you guys were about. It wasn't just about, you know, the ballad or and that's kind of been a cool thing about it. So I mean, the biggest, I don't think the second record was really that much different than the first record in terms of diversity, other than the fact that the ballad from the second record became a hit. And, you know, I think it skewed people's perception. And I understand, I mean, it's nothing. I mean, people are always like, are you mad? It's like, no, why would I be mad that I had a song that we clearly wrote and played and a huge chunk of people liked it, you know? I mean, it's unfortunate that we lived in a time period then. I think it almost makes more sense now than it did then, because you know, people listen to anything now, and they're not so defined by genre as they were then. Like, you were a metalhead, or you were in a new wave, or you were a punk, and that's who you sat at school tables with, and that's what you wore, and that's – now it's like, you know, I know my kid listens to Skrillex and AC/DC and Metallica and whatever, you know, just good songs. So I think that's kind of the way I always approached music, because, I mean, while I was a fan of, you know, Ozzy, I was a fan of Barry Manilow.
Absolutely.
So it's like – I just like great songs. So I really never – I was always making somebody mad by putting, you know, a song like Love Is On The Way next to a song like The Lizard or vice versa. And it just didn't – never thought to make music any differently. I just was like, you know, if you go to see a movie, I don't know anybody who only goes and sees, you know, slasher films. Like you go see that, and then maybe you go see a Hugh Grant movie that's a romantic comedy, and then maybe you go see The Godfather, and then maybe you go see – you know, whatever, Friday the 13th, and maybe you go see Pulp Fiction. And you know, and I always looked at music like it all should represent different emotions, different thoughts, different things. And, you know, even the angriest, you know, metal punk guy I've ever known at some point had a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a relationship or a tragedy or a horrifying thing happen, or, you know, and that's to me what music does best, is kind of represent those things. So that's kind of an overview, and I'm amazed that I just spent 5 minutes not answering your question whatsoever.
I like that because this is exactly – I went out with my friend Nikki after your show, and we were kind of sitting there hypothesizing on, you know, you were referencing, you know, the demise of Saigon Kick, and kind of, you know, we were like, what happened, you know? And I said, I always saw you guys fitting in more with kind of the Faith No More's and the Living Colors and the Jane's Addictions, and you definitely had a more alternative sound. And as you said, like there was a diversity within your albums that made you guys stand out to me. But, you know, it was Love Is On The Way, like you said, that made people say, oh, okay, they fit in here with these other right. hair metal bands, you know, with their massive power ballads, even though that song is way above and beyond any other power ballad of that era. But you know, then, of course, that entire subgenre kind of imploded, you know, in a matter of a couple of years after that, and possibly taking you guys with them. When I
my joke is always that we actually killed hair metal. Like, yeah. Love Is On The Way was the last ballad that flew. So, like, we really made Nirvana's career possible, because we destroyed all of the hair metal careers in one fell swoop with that ballad. And then Nirvana was able to really explode. So
totally.
We're responsible for grunge. That's how I took one for the team.
I know. We're getting kind of philosophical. I'm like, am I making this more complicated than it is? But no, really, there is something to that. So that's really interesting.
No, but that's what I mean. It's funny. I mean, you say we played shows with Faith No More. We played with Soundgarden. We toured with the Ramones.
Yes.
We toured with, you know, Cheap Trick. We toured with a bunch of different stuff. So, I mean, we played with shows with Ozzy. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was just a weird time in music. I mean, I think Extreme probably suffered a similar branding.
Same, yeah.
And King's X, to a certain degree, too, kind of fell in between.
Yep.
I kind of pride myself on the fact that the greatest thing about Saigon Kick was that all the grunge bands hated us for being hair metal, and all the hair metal bands hated us for being grunge.
Absolutely.
So, like, we were never embraced by any of them. And I don't have anything against, you know, hair metal or grunge or anything, but we were never – you know, it's not like all those bands of the hair metal time were like, oh, yeah, we're all part of the same thing. They never really wanted anything to do with us. And not in a mean-spirited way as much as we were just not of that movement to them.
You were the misfits. You guys were the misfits.
Yeah. We really were.
Yeah.
We really were.
You were.
We were the uninvited dinner guests.
You were. Hey, I don't mind that. I like the misfit personalities more than the people that just fit in all the time. So that's a cool thing. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well,
so,
thank you.
So tell me what's up next for you. What do you have planned for the rest of this year and next year? Anything aside from just writing and just putting out a ton of music, which I encourage everyone to go on Bandcamp and check it all out. There's a ton of it.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to continue writing. I'm continue doing these shows. I have a I'm going to New Orleans and Baton Rouge in a few weeks, and then I'm going to LA again and Atlanta. I go to Florida. I have a bunch of dates coming up. I'm talking about doing some kind of musical project with Jeff Scott Soto. which hopefully will take place at some point either this year or next year.
Nice.
Jonathan Mover and I are talking about doing something, which will probably be a really kind of heavy, interesting, kind of more full-on project. Just continuing to, you know, make music. I mean, I'm just so lucky that, you know, like I mean, it's just an amazing thing to me that, you know, these years later, I can go to New York or go to Boston, stay in a wonderful hotel, hang out with a bunch of people and goof off. And I feel like someone's going to fire me. Like I'm just waiting for the boss. I feel like the boss is going to find out that I've been pulling the scam. And so it's just an amazing – I've never had more fun. And I don't mean that in a – like, you know, I mean, obviously having a hit's a great thing. But just like relaxing into who I am and what I do and then finding a group of people that like that is I don't think you get lucky.
Yeah, but and it's not going to go away because you're the real deal. People know authenticity when they see it, and they see that in you. So I see you having a long career ahead of you, and so grateful that you came on Talking Metal today. And like I said, everyone check him out, jasonbeeler.com, and also get him on Twitter and Instagram, where you give us the funny jokes, and you also keep us updated on what's going on with you. So. Thanks again for coming on.
Well, I can't thank you enough for having me. I can't thank you enough for coming out to the show. And I also enjoy all your posts. And I think we're now officially besties. We're best friends.
We are officially. Thanks so much. We'll have you back on again soon. So stay in touch, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Right. Thank you. Bye-bye. What a fun interview. I love talking with Jason.
What was that song right there that we just heard coming out of the interview?
That is a solo track of his called All at Once. It's on his EP, Birds of Prey. All of his music is available. It's available anywhere, but you can support him on Bandcamp and on his website. And, you know, it's available on Spotify, of course. But I truly encourage all of you to check out his solo stuff because it's as diverse as the Saigon Kick catalog.
Right, right on. Great stuff. And thanks for that interview. I'm still flipping through Martin's book here.
Yeah, let's hear some. Do you have any zero? Did you find a zero yet?
The two record that Trent Reznor worked on with John Five and Rob Halford, yeah. Which I always loved that record.
What did he give it?
Got a four. Yeah. The Typo Negative record, which many people just think is a perfect record. I'm one of them. Bloody Kisses. I mean, what a powerhouse.
Yes.
To me, that's a 10 out of 10. He gave it a 7.
He gave it a 7?
Yeah, which is crazy to me.
He's tough.
Yeah, he is tough.
Martin Popov is tough. I like that about him, though.
The Holy record by UDO, he actually gave 9, which is high for him.
That's cool.
Yeah, and Ugly Kid Joe, looks like he gave all their records in the 97s, except for America's Least Wanted, which I think was their bigger record in 92.
Can you find a zero? Five. Can you just flip through until you find a zero?
I know he gave Hysteria by Def Leppard. That's in the 80s.
He did not give it a zero.
He gave that a zero.
Wait, you guys, can we talk about this for a second? There's something wrong in his brain.
Yeah.
You don't get, Martin, we're going to have a conversation about this next time I see you. You don't give Hysteria a zero. You can't give that album a zero.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Was he mad at them? Does he not like them?
He just didn't like it. Here's a zero. The various artists, Hot for Teacher, a tribute to Van Halen.
No.
Rating zero.
Oh, no.
Another Twisted Deadline ploy. Here's one from their Metal versus Electronica series with at least the... Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I'm not going to read it. 0 out of 0. Or 0 out of 10. I'm sorry. 0 out of 10 for that one. Still flipping through.
That's so mean. That's evil. Hysteria is not a 0 out of 0. I'm sorry. I know a lot of people that don't like that. We just had Matt McJunkins on the podcast talking about that album. We both love it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's not my favorite Def Leppard album, but it was very important to me. Does not deserve a zero. That's redunculous. And I never use that word. I hate that word.
The Crimson Idol, which a lot of people loved by Wasp, I think that's a really strong record. He gave that only a 6 out of 10. So anyways.
10 out of, what the bottom line is, 10 out of 10 is serious coming from him.
Yeah.
And so, he said it's a perfect album.
So let's go, while we're talking about Martin Popoff here, these are the top 20 heavy metal records of the 90s as picked by Martin Popoff. At 20, The Tea Party, The Edges of Twilight. At number 19, an album that most people would probably put at number 1 for the 90s metal. But Popoff puts it at 19, Pantera, Vulgar Display of Power. Number 18, Danzig 4. I actually really like the Danzig 4 record, kind of overlooked. Number 17, again, this is just the 90s, guys, as picked by Martin Popoff, Megadeth, Rust in Peace. Number 16, a record that I just love, and I was so sad when I interviewed Jizzy Pearl and he was an asshole. Love Hate. Blackout in the Red Room. My brother and I loved that record.
Yeah.
Oh, another good one. 15.
Never gonna listen to it again.
Paw, Dragline. Paw was a grunge band, not from Seattle, and they were very, very good and very overlooked.
Where did you put them? 15?
15.
Nice.
14.
Keep on going.
Pantera, Far Beyond Driven.
Okay.
13. Love Hate, Let's Rumble. Yeah, Martin's a big Love Hate guy.
Yeah.
12. Slayer, Seasons in the Abyss.
Nice.
11, King's X, Tapehead.
Oh my God, yeah.
10, Bill Ward, the Sabbath drummer's solo record, When the Burrow Breaks.
Who's... Okay.
9.
I don't know that.
Deep Purple, Abandon.
All right.
8, Last Crack, burning time. I have no, I'm like fairly like a metal expert.
Some
people might say I have no idea what last crack burning time is. No clue.
Big crack.
Yeah, that's Martin's number 8 greatest.
That's your greatest hit. This is your big crack.
Oh, thanks. Number 7, King's X, Dogma. Number 6, Trouble, Trouble. Self-titled. Number 5, Metal Church, The Human Factor. Another love-hate one.
3 love-hate?
Yeah.
On here? We need to take this. Does he like Jizzy Pearl? Was Jizzy Pearl nice to him? He must have been.
Wasted in America. Number 3, Deep Purple.
Another Deep Purple.
Perpendicular. Number 2, Trouble, Manic Frustration. And number 1, a guy who I just hung out with, Billy Gibbons. ZZ Top's Rhythmine.
Rhythmine. Have all the listeners heard this story? I mean, we kind of talked about it.
But for those who haven't heard,
who are listening to this episode, Mark had a very random experience hanging out with John Ostrowski at a bar, and Billy Gibbons showed up. And
I told this story a couple episodes ago. But yeah, it was just, oh, you mean for people who are listening to this that didn't hear it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just so crazy. I mean, we had recorded a podcast that night. We shut the mics off, and then the Billy Gibbons walks in with the King of Guinea.
into a random bar.
This wasn't like it was like some like place, like hipster place in Manhattan. This is like in New Jersey at a random bar in New Jersey.
It was like the only place they could find to park their tour bus. Yeah.
And the reason John suggested we record a podcast there, because I was working up in Englewood that day. And I said, I'll drive down to your area there, because he lives in Jersey City. And I said, I can't do street parking because it's so tough to find a spot. And I said, I need a lot that's free, you know, because in that area, it's so congested.
So did Billy Gibbons.
Yeah. So John recommended, he said, you know what? I know this hotel and you can park. They're the only places where you can park a car for free in
or
that
a
area.
Tour bus.
And apparently a tour bus too. Yeah.
It's so
well, the
fun.
King came over from New York to meet up with Billy. But yeah, craziness. And Billy was so cool. And
so that's the number one album from the 90s, according to...
Yeah, I don't even know that record. I have no idea. I mean, I know the ZZ Top from the 80s and a little bit from the 70s.
Can we talk about something? You just said record. I don't know that record. When I say record, I think of a 45 still.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because
I should say album. Probably.
I say album, but I notice a lot of people say record. Can we talk about what the appropriate term is?
I think it's just the old fogies say.
Record.
Yeah.
That's a great record.
Yeah.
But when I hear record, I think of a 45.
Just like when you watch like CNN or something.
But no one knows what a 45 is even. Like
they're like, well, the tape said this. There's no tape.
There's no tape.
Yeah, there's no tape in TV or everything's delivered on digital.
I'm gonna videotape. I said that once to someone, like, I'm gonna videotape it or something, and they were like laughing hysterically at
me. Yeah. Yeah. Like and kids today would just say, I'm gonna video that or I'm gonna shoot that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's no tape anymore. People don't really know. Anyone under like 25 doesn't know what tape is, you know.
I had a pencil that I used specifically for winding my cassette tapes, so.
Right. Nice.
They'd get loose.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm sure there's other people out there who know exactly what you mean, and there's probably some of the younger people who
they have
who
no
don't.
Clue what we're talking about right now. Sorry, we lost you.
Well, listen, to take us out, let's hit a little love-hate. The two interviews that always come to mind as the worst talking metal interviews
no,
of all time.
Seriously, why are you going to play them?
Were
why are you going to give them your
Fieldy
support?
Fieldy
from Korn, total
completely
jackass.
Rude, yeah. And the second one I would say was Jizzy Pearl.
Yeah.
And I always thought, you know, for a long time we were in kind of a feud with the Classic Metal Show, and I was always like, oh, I think those guys are friends with Jizzy Pearl. They must have told him, be a dick to Mark.
No.
And Chris Aiken and I are now friends, and I said to him once, I said, did you tell Jizzy Pearl to, you know...
Be a dick
to us. And he was like, no, never.
Can we talk about the nicest people we've ever interviewed? I mean, everyone's typically nice.
Of course.
But sometimes I feel like the more famous they are, the more gracious they are. Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, Ozzy was so nice.
He's amazing.
Ian
Rob
Gillen.
Halford.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Right. Absolutely.
Ian Gillen, yes. He was, like, they are just class act. works.
Yeah.
And they know how to treat people.
I got to say, too, Vinnie Paul was so...
He was.
Nice. And
oh, my God.
We hung out with him, John and I, at a bowling alley.
Breaks my heart.
Interviewing him.
It breaks my heart.
We bowled, and I played him my band. And
I know.
And
he like, played it over the loudspeaker.
Yeah, and no, and he was asking me questions about
know.
It. And
he was
wanted
genuinely
the CD. He liked it. He said the drummer was great, and he was asking me questions about it.
He listened.
And he was very sincere, down-to-earth guy, just a big sweetheart. And we've had him on the show numerous times, but only once did we hang out with him in person.
I know.
Actually, John hung out with him numerous times. Yeah, I only hung out with him once in person.
But like all the words you just used, authentic or whatever, genuine, big-hearted.
Right.
Like when you hear this over and over again when someone dies, I must have seen 50 tweets that said the same thing.
And you know who was kind of a dick when we interviewed him? Rex Brown from Pantera. He definitely comes up on the top 20 asshole interview list for me. And we've interviewed hundreds of people. Phil Anselmo.
Can we do? Oh,
so awesome. And I was nervous because he's kind of an intimidating figure. And he was just the nicest guy. I remember I said to him at one point, well, we've done about 30 minutes here. He's like, I don't got anything to do. He's like, let's keep talking. Yeah, it was like he didn't want the interview to end. Yeah. You know, he's such a nice guy.
You know, this brings up the fact that we need to do a top 20 asshole interviews.
Yeah, I don't know if I could do 20. I know I named three right there.
I think
Rex wasn't as bad as Fieldy or
let's do
Jizzy
like a
Pearl.
Top 10. Let's do a top 10 and tell the stories. I think the listeners would love to hear that. Considering we've done 700 something episodes at this point.
Yes.
And when I say we, I haven't done 700 episodes,
right.
But I've been a part of the podcast, just kind of standing on the sidelines for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, since the beginning, should I say?
Yeah, absolutely. Since the beginning. And now it's been a few years that you've been involved with doing interviews for us, and they're great. And John has expressed an interest to get back into the fold.
It'd be so fun.
And one thing I'd like to do, and I have to give a shout out, I don't know if he's still listening at this point, to Jerry from Long Island. Because he's kind of inspired me. I like that Jerry listens to not just the classic bands, but a lot of new stuff. And when Talking Metal started out, we did everything. If it was hard rock, if it was, you know, metal, it didn't matter if it was, you know, Poison or if it was, you know, super like Arch Enemy or Lamb of God or, you know, Unearth or bands like that. Unearth, I can't remember that, but you know, we did all sorts of different styles of music when we started out, and I feel like I at some point kind of fine-tuned it so we became more of just the classic bands.
Classic
and I want to get back because I see people like Jerry who had some requests on the last episode. And
Jerry, thank you for the patch, by the way. I'm putting the patch on my jacket.
Yeah, they made.
He got
patch.
Me a maiden
he gave
patch.
Us, he gave, I think he gave us each one. Didn't
I, lo- yeah. I think he may have given you one.
Yeah,
mine's gonna end up on my jacket for sure.
You know, I do think that's what we need to do. I think we need to kind of
open it back up.
Open it back up, and I think this Heavy Montreal will be a big first step in that.
Yeah,
and
there's a couple bands I have on my radar that I want to get on the podcast. I've kind of been talking to people behind the scenes, so we'll see some of that coming too.
Yes,
I wish we were like a video podcast right now. Is there such a thing as a video podcast? Because Ozzy, our dog, is having some kind of bad dream right now, and his paws, he's running in his sleep right now.
Is he?
Yeah. Can we get this on video? I'm just kidding.
No.
Can we get him on the green screen?
We are going to do more YouTube stuff. Of course, the station is youtube.com/talkingmetal. So definitely check that station out. And on that note, let's hit some love, hate, and get out of here.
Out.
This is Blackout in the Red Room by Love Hate featuring Jizzy Pearl. Here we go. Talk to you next time, guys.
Gonna pick down. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.